ghosts, specters, whatever you want to call them, they've been around for thousands of years.
Apparently she died from a tooth infection in one of the upstairs rooms in the house.
As in the locations they haunt. History of a Haunting podcast tells you all about these famous, infamous, and almost famous locations, and why they became terrifying places to visit. Grab a glass of wine and settle in with your hosts, Archie.
I mean, that was definitely the wrong thing to do.
And Carrie.
Nobody asked for it, Carrie.
Nobody fucking asked for it, but hey, my podcast, and I'll say what I fucking want.
Two people just winging it in life, and this podcast. So enjoy this week's episode of History of a Haunting.
Hi, guys.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to History of a Haunting. It is Easter Sunday. Did you know that? Did you forget?
No.
Yeah? Coy forgot it.
Oh, well, yeah.
He came out and I had said something to him about the holiday and he's like, it's a holiday? What holiday is it? And I'm like, it's Easter. And he was like, he looks around all over the living room and he was like, did you hide the eggs? And I was like, no, we haven't done that in years. He's 19. He's 19. And he was like, worst Easter ever, and grabbed a drink and went into his room and I hollered after him. I'm like, you didn't even know it was Easter. Yeah. So, that's how Easter is going in my house.
Fine.
Do you guys have anything special planned?
No.
No?
No.
No. Yeah, we don't, I mean, especially now because everybody is stuck in their homes, but we used to go up to my Aunt Des's for a big potluck and all the kids in the family would do a big Easter egg hunt all over her property. But we haven't done that in years either.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, if Coy didn't go with us to my Aunt Des's, he would go with his grandparents to his aunt's. Obviously, no one's doing that this year. And it's just kind of, you know, super mellow Easter. But happy Easter, guys. A week late. Arch, a couple of updates and announcements, which we need to come up with a title for this.
Other than updates and announcements?
Yeah, it's lame. We got to come up with, you know.
Announcements and updates.
That just sings. That's way better. So the first thing I want to do is, Arch, I think I tagged you in the post, but our sponsor, Love Heals Rescue, is co-owned by Christy Stewart. And I am such an awesome friend that I forgot her birthday. And it was, it was yesterday. So we want to give a little belated shout out to our dear friend, Christy. And we are so sorry that we missed it yesterday. So we're giving you a big birthday shout out here on the podcast. We hope you had a really lovely day. She is really wonderful. And her organization that she owns with Andrea Langston is really wonderful. They've been a sponsor of the podcast since our inception. And so, yeah, I forgot it, Chrissy. I suck, but you already knew that. The next thing, Arch, I think we wanted to let everybody know is that we have air quote hired, and by hired, I mean with a handshake and give him alcohol. We have somebody that's actually going to be taking over our social media and our email and that kind of thing to handle all of the messages and things like that come in from the listeners. We get quite a bit, and just between our two schedules, we need somebody that's going to kind of spearhead that and take that over for us. Obviously, most of what we get is location suggestions and things like that. But, you know, occasionally we do have, you know, other folks just writing in and talking to us about their experiences and they have questions and stuff like that for us. So he's going to kind of filter through all of that and forward anything over to us that we would need to give a little bit more of an answer on than just thanks so much kind of a thing. So his name is Mike. He's a friend of ours. And so he's going to be taking over all of that information and stuff like that. Of course, we will still, you know, be posting stuff to our social media ourselves like we do. He's just going to kind of help us handle.
Monitor the inbound.
Yeah, kind of be what are those folks called? Administrators or
just an assistant? I don't know.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, we haven't really given him a real official title, but yeah, just kind of monitor all the inbound. And then if there's something, you know, that we need to address specifically from us, then, you know, he'll forward that on to us and we can handle it from there. But yeah, so it's great that we have this problem, that we're getting big enough and busy enough that we need somebody to help us with this stuff. So just wanted to make that little announcement. Welcome aboard, Mike. You are so fucked. And then that's about it. Let's get into the episode. We are doing, this is a location suggestion from my friend Tiffany Richardson. And I've actually known Tiffany since we were in junior high.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We went to Madison number one together. And so she messaged us, actually, Archie, she messaged us right before Christmas with this location suggestion. Yeah. She lives in Idaho now, and she's been to this location. We are going to be doing the Old Idaho Penitentiary.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Penitentiary. I think we have this problem with Eastern State. Old Idaho Penitentiary, right?
Penitentiary. This is going to be fun.
Old Idaho Jailhouse. Anyway, all right. So that's all I've got. Arch, do you have any quick updates and stuff that you want to throw out there?
No, I sure don't.
Okay. All right. Well, I briefly skimmed the history that you sent me, and I didn't want to spoil anything for myself because I read a couple of really fucking amazing things. So I was like, I'll just wait till he tells me in the episode. So I'm going to sit back with my Easter wine, not to be confused with my everyday wine, because it's the same thing, and let you tell me about the history of the Old Idaho Penitentiary.
All right. Let me get a... Okay. So the Old Idaho State Penitentiary, as written on triplecordrealestate.com, on March 4th, 1863, President Abraham Lincoln signed an act that created the Idaho Territory, sprawling across an area one quarter larger than Texas. This frontier land was lawless, and in order to obtain its statehood in the Union, it needed a place to hold the dregs of society and reform others, a prison.
So it wasn't a state yet, it was just a territory. No,
exactly, just a territory.
Oh, wow, okay.
In 1870, the penitentiary began as a one-cell house known as the Territorial Prison, built just east of Boise. It received its first 11 inmates from the Boise County Jail. It quickly grew into a complex of buildings surrounded by a 17-foot high sandstone wall.
I can hear EKB giggling already.
Yeah, good.
Whatever makes her happy.
As part of their penance, the prisoners mined nearby rock quarries to build the very walls that would hold them captive. Over its 101 years of operation, it received more than 13,000 inmates, 215 of these were women, with a maximum population of a little over 600. At least 110 of them died inside from old age, illness, and murder.
Yeah.
The area now known as the Rose Garden was once used to execute prisoners by hanging. Of the 10 executions in the old state penitentiary, 6 occurred here. There's also an outdoor recreational area where inmates boxed and played baseball, basketball, handball, tennis, horseshoes, and football. The baseball and later softball team was named the Outlaws and frequently played teams from across Treasure Valley.
What were those guys called? The bootleggers and the...
I don't know. But... I've got some bullet points to go through here.
Oh, I did. I saw some of those. Yeah.
It's kind of a timeline of everything. In 1889, the new cell house was built, consisting of three tiers of 42 steel cells. The third tier, closest to the Rose Garden, served as death row. In 1893, the administration building was built, housing the warden's office, armory, visitation room, control room, and the turnkey area. In 1894, the false front buildings were added, holding the commissary, blacksmith shops, and trustee dorm.
The false front?
The false front buildings. That's just what it's called.
So was it maybe like Eastern State, you know, how Becky was saying that it looked like there were windows. If you were looking at it from the outside, it looked like there were windows or whatever. But when you were actually in the building, there were no windows. There was no nothing. It was just to make it look a little bit more welcoming, I guess. Maybe it was like that?
I could be. I don't know.
Huh. Okay, sorry.
In 1898, the dining hall, designed by inmate George Hamilton, was built. In 1899, Cell House 2, also known as the North Wing, was built and contained two-man cells. A honey bucket was placed in each cell to serve as a toilet.
Yeah, I heard about this on a podcast I listened to. This has ruined Winnie the Pooh for me forever. I'm just saying.
Cell House 3 was also built, the same as Cell House 2. Oh, bit my tongue, motherfucker.
Oh, shit. That's awful.
In 1902, a barbershop was added to the false front buildings and was operated until the 1960s. Hmm. In 1905, Harry Orchard assassinated former Governor Frank Stunenberg and became the first famous inmate. That same year, the woman's ward was built out of necessity to house Lyda Southard, known as Idaho's Lady Bluebeard, for killing several of her husbands to collect upon their life insurance.
That was such a popular thing back in that era. I've listened to so many true crime podcasts of black widows or men that married a gazillion times and knocked them all off for their insurance, their life insurance, which of course at the time was like $1,000, but in today's money was like $500,000.
Well, prior to its completion, women did not have separate quarters in the penitentiary. Male inmates built a wall around the old warden's home to serve as a separate facility for women, with 7 two-person cells, a central day room, kitchen, and bathroom facilities. In June of 1907, with an eerily calm demeanor that stunned the courtroom, Harry Orchard was cross-examined for 26 hours regarding the many crimes of his life, including his killings, bigamy, heavy drinking, compulsive gambling, womanizing, and career as a union terrorist that resulted in the loss of 17 lives, one of which was Governor Stunenberg. Orchard had killed Stunenberg at the request of unionizer Big Bill Haywood, who was seeking revenge for the governor's harsh crackdown on miners in 1899. In exchange for the killing, Orchard received several $100 and a ranch. Although sentenced to death, a judge recommended his sentence be commuted to life in prison, and the Board of Pardons agreed. He lived over 45 years within the prison walls, the longest sentence served by any Idaho State Penitentiary inmate. He died in 1954. In 1912, the blacksmith shop was remodeled into a hospital and remained the prison hospital until the 1960s. In the early 1920s, the first solitary confinement section was built and known as the cooler. Although it was built for solitary confinement, each cell contained 4 to 6 men.
Oh. Yeah, I'll have more on that lovely metropolis in my part.
Oh. In 1921, Cell House 3 was converted into a shoe factory. In 1923, the multi-purpose building was built by the inmates and served as a shirt factory, shoe shop, bakery, license plate shop, laundry, hobby room, and loafing room, also housing communal showers.
What's a loafing room?
I'm imagining you just go in there to lay around.
Okay, that's probably where the term loafing around came from.
Perhaps.
Interesting.
In 1926, a second solitary confinement area was built, known as Siberia, and housed 12 3x8 cells with one inmate per cell. In 1928, cell house 3 was remodeled for inmate occupancy and became the first cell house with indoor plumbing.
Thank God.
God, what, 30 years later?
Those honeypots must have been ripe.
Oh, God. In the 1930s, the territorial prison building was converted into a chapel. In 1952, cell house 4 was built. It was the largest and most modern cell house at the penitentiary. Some of the inmates painted their cells and left drawings on the walls that can still be seen today.
Why were they allowed to paint their fucking cells?
I don't know. In 1954, cell house 5 was built. This was maximum security, where the most unruly and violent offenders stayed and served as a permanent place of solitary confinement. It included built-in gallows and death row. In 1957, Raymond Allen Snowden was executed for the murder of Cora Dean, which occurred in Garden City on September 23, 1956. He was nicknamed Idaho's Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm. I talk about him, too.
Okay. In 1971 and 1973, severe riots broke out. The inmates suffered through almost inhumane conditions. The sandstone walls intensified the temperatures inside the cells, retaining the stifling heat of Boise's hot summers and the chilling cold of its winters. Unpleasant conditions were complicated by the prison's ill-working ventilation system. Conditions like these pushed inmates to the edge, and guards answered violence with more violence until the prisoners reached their breaking point. The prisoners burned the chapel and dining hall to the ground and damaged many other buildings.
Holy shit.
Shortly thereafter, the 416 prisoners were moved to Idaho State Correctional Institutions south of Boise. The penitentiary was closed and placed on the National Register of Historic Places. From the smoke and fire-blackened stone to the calendar still hanging on the cell walls, the buildings were left exactly as they were at the end of these riots.
Yes.
In 1974, the prison was opened for tours. Some guides and visitors attest to strange sounds, voices, and a sinister feeling of dark entities still lurking in the cell blocks.
It closed in 1973, and they opened it for tours in 74?
Yeah.
They didn't waste any time with that shit, did they?
Not a minute.
How? Because you hear about, like, these places, but it's, like, 5 to 10 years before they, like, open it up. And then in that time, it vandals and disrepair and this and that. But it doesn't
right.
sound. Wow. Wow. Okay.
Boom. Income. Well, the old Idaho Penitentiary is currently managed by the Idaho State Historical Society. It features 30 historic buildings and special exhibitions, including a collection of tapes and transcripts from oral interviews with 15 former prison guards covering prison operations and remembrances from the 1950s to the closing of the prison. The collection is open for research at the Society. Also, J.C. Earle donated his personal collection of historic arms and military memorabilia to the state of Idaho, which placed them on exhibition at the old Idaho Penitentiary. They range from the Bronze Age to those used today for sport, law enforcement, and military purposes. Still today, events and programs provide families, school groups, and visitors an opportunity to relive the old pen's exciting past of daring escapes, scandals, and executions.
That is so awesome, Arch. Good job. Tiffany, the girl who suggested that, she's been there, and she said it was super creepy and definitely worthy of an episode. So she's not wrong. I had no idea. I mean, I suppose every state has a creepy fucking old prison. Some are just creepier than others, and I feel like this one might be in the near vicinity of Eastern State. It's a place. Let me tell you. It's a place. So let's listen to this really quick promo for our sponsor, Love Heals Rescue. And soon as that is done, we will get to my portion, the haunting portion of the old Idaho State Penitentiary. We'll be right back, guys.
Love Heals Rescue is a nonprofit organization that believes every dog in need deserves a second chance at a new life.
Love Heals wants to partner with the community to help as many dogs as possible find loving homes, while also helping dogs in need in the area, such as providing a last litter program where the mother dog is fixed and returned or adopted, and all of the puppies are fixed, examined by a vet, microchipped, and adopted out to help with the overpopulation of dogs in the area.
Love Heals Rescue cannot continue to help the community without a dedicated foster network.
Please consider becoming a foster. You can find them on Facebook by searching Love Heals Rescue.
Help us be a part of the solution.
Okay, guys, welcome back. Thank you so much. Are we ready for some ghosts, Archie?
Yeah, let's bring it on.
Okay. So, sandstone, which is what you had said, I believe, was what the inmates built the prison with?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So as we've talked about in a number of previous episodes, that is an earthly conductor for spiritual energy. It's sandstone, limestone, all of that good stuff, because it intensifies energetic heat within its domain. And like you also mentioned, the prison was kind of notorious for retaining the heat during the hot Idaho summers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So sort of a perfect combination, because the property was built with sandstone, it was sort of a perfect recipe for paranormal activity, given all of the crazy shit that happened at this place. Because the property was built with it, and because, like you said, it would retain the heat from the summers and just the overcrowding, this led to historic, what this article called, human devastation. And so now that it is a place that attracts the spirits of those that died within its walls. So I'm going to start my portion with a piece that I came across in A&E. I got my information from A&E. I got it from my favorite YouTube videos. I also got it from Mysterious Universe and the lineup as well. So I'm going to start my portion with a quote from Amber Byerly. Now, she is the historic sites administrator for the penitentiary. She also is a co-author of a book called Old Idaho Penitentiary. I buried the lead on that, didn't I? Oh. Now, she does say that she does believe that such paranormal spirits do exist. She went on to say that she hadn't personally experienced anything where she was like, wow, I just saw something I can't explain. But she says that it is that immediate feeling because of the history of the place and the suffering that happened there. Because you're talking about humanity at its lowest, you know the feelings that you have, the feelings of deep sadness that are very common among visitors and tour guides, are just something that you can't shake the minute you walk into the buildings.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So she did say that one of the surest signs of contact with an old pen spirit is an ashen face on a visitor. Like, all the tour guides and the staff just know when one of the visitors has seen something or felt something they can't explain, because everybody, the color just drains out of their faces. So right away, they're like, yeah, something happened to that person over there. Amber Byerly goes on to say, quote, whether they can quantify it, whether they can prove it, and most of the time they can't, but I've seen those faces and I know these people completely believe that they either experienced something, saw something, or felt something that was otherworldly. Yeah. One example of this took place in Cell House 3. A woman with this Amber Byerly said she felt something brush her hair. This is creepy as fuck, Archie. Felt something brush her hair. It was an actual physical thing that she felt brush her hair back, and she heard a whisper in her ear, pretty. No. I mean, I know. Thank you. But no. Imagine? I mean, let's think about for a minute the people that were in there and hadn't, you know, just women just walking around through the prison. Mm-hmm. That one sent shudders all through me. It was blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to jump right into a lot of the super crazy, haunting goodness with mine, air quote, goodness. Let's talk a little bit more in depth of the guy you mentioned, the guy who's sometimes referred to as Idaho's Jack the Ripper, Ray Snowden. So most of the reports in this place center around this guy. He is the most, one of the most famous inmates. And as you mentioned, he was sentenced to death for the brutal murder of a woman named Cora Dean. And prior to his 1957 execution by hanging, he actually admitted to the murders of two other women. Ooh. Yeah. So we're going to go on a teeny tiny little true crime bit here. We're going to talk a little bit more about good old Ray and his proclivity for violence. grab your wine and settle in, because this guy's a doozy. He's one of two doozies I'm actually going to talk about. So let's see here. Pause for a sip. More like a guzzle. This dude is fucked up. Okay. So the story goes that Ray was at this bar, and I can't remember the name of the bar, but this beautiful young woman in, I think it was 1956, beautiful young woman named Cora Dean came into the bar, and she was sitting there and having a few drinks, and she meets Ray Snowden, and they're talking, and they're having a good time. And, he wanted to, take her someplace quiet and continue the evening in private. And she was like, no, thanks. You know, like just hanging out, having drinks and BSing was fine with her. So as they're leaving the bar, he propositioned her basically, and she turned him down, and this pissed him off. So he basically started to like grab her arm, try to keep her to stay with him. And she was fighting against him. He said, he made her an offer that was really, really, really. He basically said to her, take your pick, rape or murder.
Ooh.
To which she replied, neither. Thank you. Goodbye. This sent him apparently into an even bigger rage, and he pulled out a knife and he brutally stabbed her. The conflicting reports that I read, that he stabbed, what's known is he stabbed her between 29 and 35 times. Ooh. Stabbing her in the spine at one point and digging the knife around until he severed her spinal cord.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. So that's why he gets the nickname of Idaho's Jack the Ripper, because it was such a brutal, vicious, violent, bloody murder. He then tossed his knife in, I don't know if it was a storm drain or a garbage can outside of a cigar shop, and took off. He tossed the knife outside of the cigar shop. And then I guess he went into the cigar shop, used the bathroom, cleaned himself up, and then just walked out.
Right on.
Jeez. Yes. He wasn't out and about long. From everything that I had read, he was caught pretty quickly, tried pretty quickly. I mean, because by 1957, he was executed, and the murder happened in 56. So it was all very quick. But that's the fun fact as to why he's called Idaho's Jack the Ripper. My guess is they had never had anything so horrific and gruesome happen, because there's beyond that, there really is no other similarity with the actual Jack the Ripper than that. This woman wasn't a sex worker. She wasn't like Jack the Ripper's victims were known to be. She wasn't, you know, anything like that. I did read a story that she was a divorcee. So anyway, that's that gem of an individual.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Now, when he died, so he was taken to not the gallows in the Rose Garden. He was taken to an actual room within the prison where the guards and everybody measured the length of the rope based on his weight. And then he stood on this square in the floor. And then there was a big, like a lever that they would pull to drop the bottom out of the floor. so that he would drop through the hole in the floor to the room below and his neck would break. However, because if it wasn't horrible, I wouldn't be talking about it in my part. However, the rope was too long. And when they pulled the lever and the bottom of the floor pulled away, he dropped, but his neck didn't break because the rope was too long. So he basically dropped to the floor underneath and swung there and strangled for 15 minutes. So it was a very slow, painful, excruciating death. It wasn't quick like it was supposed to be. Mm. From everything that I read, the prison was investigated, the execution was investigated, and they said it was just a mistake. It was a miscalculation between his weight and the length of the rope and what have you. Maybe that person was bad at math. I mean, if it were me, I definitely would have done this. But it was a pretty brutal death. So because of that, he is said to be seen, heard, and felt in this area of the prison. So you've got a real gem like this guy. And then he had a brutal death, which wasn't quite honestly nearly as brutal as Cora Deen's.
Right.
But in the years since the prison has closed, visitors and staff, tour guides, things like that, they've all claimed that his spirit still haunts the grounds. Many of these claims center around the building known as Five House, where he was hung. And they also claim that Snowden's final agonized attempts to breathe, according to records, like I said, it took over 15 minutes for him to suffocate to death. Oh, God. So his final agonized attempts to breathe can be heard throughout the building, particularly at the former location of the gallows.
Wow.
Uh-huh. The majority of the prisoners included, along with visitors and guards, have reported a feeling of dread and oppression in certain areas, particularly in and around his cell and the area that he died. Reports of hearing footsteps echoing in the halls when there is no one else around. Disembodied voices have been heard, and those that have participated on the walking tours of the penitentiary have reported being touched and sometimes even pushed by unseen hands.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you know how, like, you trip over, like, a little, like, raised bump in, a stone floor, and you're like, oh, my God, that's so embarrassing. But, I mean, imagine being shoved, like that's got to be even more terrifying. You know how you're like, sort of like, oh my God, when you trip just kind of over your own feet or off, right, like a right, little tight, right. But to be shoved and know that there's no one behind you, you turn around, there's no one there. That's got to be horrifying.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. And let's hope that's all we can ever do, Arch. Just fucking imagine. So now, most people that have entered the penitentiary say that they have had a feeling of being watched. And it's also, again, common to report hearing, or it's also common to hear reports of apparitions and shadowy figures lingering throughout the abandoned prison. Apparently, Mr. Snowden also makes his presence known by causing batteries to go dead, and he's been seen as a greenish light. So, maybe Disco Debbie from the Disneyland episode. She was seen as a greenish light. Maybe she's a descendant. That would be horrible, but I don't know. That's the only other time I've ever heard of an apparition that kind of appears green. Paranormal investigators have recorded numerous unexplained sounds like screaming, laughter, and banging. They even report finding various locations inside featuring odd cold spots, especially in the dead of summer, which that building is still made of sandstone. The summers are still hot. So it's probably miserable to go there in the summer. It's become a bucket list location of mine because it's so, the history is insane and the hauntings are crazy, but no, we're not going to go in the summer. Let's see. Some of the disembodied laughter is sometimes heard in the prison is believed to be that of Snowden. Again, his ghost has been reported being seen inside on more than one occasion. What I found interesting was that his cell is still left dark out of respect for his soul. So there's electricity in the building, but they keep his cell dark out of respect for his soul. Huh. I thought that was kind of interesting. That's never So, additionally, the bar where he met Cora Dean has also had numerous paranormal situations. Shadows seen walking around in the back room of the bar and by the back door, the door they exited out of when they left that night. The cigar shop Hannafin's, where he tossed the knife he killed her with, has also reported paranormal occurrences. There was an interview I saw with the owner that he was in the back office and he frequently hears boots stomp across the floor and over to the bathroom where he came in and used that night to clean himself up after he killed Cora.
Wow.
Uh-huh. So this guy is just kind of going all over. Oh, this part is awful. Like, I don't even know why you would let your children do this. Archie's face is like, I'm sorry, children.
What?
A tour guide stated that she was giving a tour to children and they were in the room Snowden was executed in. They heard a loud bang and the slamming and the sound of the door to the execution chamber slammed shut.
Oh, okay. All right.
If it were me as a child, I'd be like, I'd be terrified, but I'd still be all fucking for it. If it were Coy as a child, it would traumatize him for the rest of his life and he'd probably get therapy until he died. That would be, I would never take Coy to something like that ever, ever, ever. Okay. So in addition to Snowden, many guests and tour guides claim that sinister feelings, strange sounds, voices, and dark entities still lurk in the cell blocks of the penitentiary, particularly near the former solitary confinement cells. Now, here's where we get to our second true crime story. A man named Van Vlack. V-L-A-C-K, Van Vlack. This peachy fellow, he had married a woman named Mildred Hook. And they were married for a while, seemingly, you know, in the beginning, everything was sunshine and roses. But then he lost his job and he became abusive toward her. And so she filed for divorce and then they reconciled. And then she filed for divorce again. She moved back home to her parents in Washington. And he was obsessed with her and kept trying to find ways to get her back. So he went up to Washington and he kidnapped her. And they went on, he went on the lam and took her with him. And so like the whole thing traversed a bunch of states like Oregon and I think Northern California, culminating in a bad times in Idaho. Along the way, he shot two policemen that died. And when they finally caught up to him, they knew that he had her, and her family was terrified and worried. In the end, when they arrested him, he fessed up that he murdered her and where they could find her body, which ended up being, they called it a culvert, but the way they described it was a sewage drain.
Oh, geez.
He had bashed her in the head with the butt of the gun, and he had shot her in the head. So he was sent to, because I believe one of the policemen or both of them were Idaho state troopers. So he was sent to old Idaho penitentiary. And he was sentenced to death. On the day of his execution, he did get a visit from his mother, who whispered something in his ear. After that, the guards led him up to the upper level of the penitentiary, to the third floor, where then I guess he was going to be transferred down to the gallows outside. That part wasn't clear to me. But what happened was he got away from his guards, and he ran up to an additional flight of stairs, I think. And at the top of the building, the guards were trying to get him to come back down. And they were like, okay, come back. Come on. Let's not enough of this nonsense, basically. And as they started to rush him, he said, I have the right to die the way I choose. And he jumped off the walkway 30 feet to the concrete ground below, landed on his head and shoulder, and didn't die.
Oh, my God.
So they rushed down there and they rolled his body onto a mattress and covered it with a blanket. And while they were like kind of trying to decide what to do with him, do we go through with the execution? Do we not? I mean, he's not going to make it. What do we do? So they basically just left him there to lay on the mattress and die a slow, painful death from his injuries. They believe he broke his neck, but he was alive for a time after that.
Wow.
Yeah, so that is good old Mr. Van Vlack. I can't remember what his name was. I think it was Carl Van Vlack or Gary. I can't remember. Anyway, so that's him. And he is also attributed to a number of, like I said earlier, sinister feelings, strange sounds, voices, and dark entities lurking in the prison. Just really awful, awful, awful. Now, the solitary confinement building, also called Siberia, as you mentioned, during its time as a prison, guards would often hear inmates yelling and screaming incessantly from in here. I mean, the conditions were awful, but yelling and screaming incessantly is something that people have heard to this day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I wonder if that's one of those stone tape theory things, you know, where it's just kind of recorded, like, the grief and the almost insanity that people were experiencing in those cells. And it's just kind of playing it as a visual haunt. Cold spots and apparitions are seen in here. It is considered to be, along with Cell House 5, to be the place with the heaviest feeling of sadness and dread felt in it. So people walk in and they're immediately just like overcome with grief and sadness, and they don't know where it came from. They can't seem to shake it until they leave the building.
Wow.
I think that's my biggest fear of going into a location, is having my emotions kind of taken over.
Right.
I feel like that would be really, I think that would be the most terrifying thing. Anyway, this one visitor was looking through the small window in the cell door. So it had a big metal fucking door. And then in it, it had a little like opening cut out with it. There was a little window or a door where they would either pass their food to them or whatever.
Okay.
And she was looking through this little opening in this thick metal door. And it was during the day on a tour. And when she looked into it, obviously the sunlight from where she was poured into the cell. And as she looked into it, she saw a shadow stand up in the corner of the cell. She ran screaming out of the penitentiary and never bothered to come back, finish her tour, anything like that. That would be... I've seen shadow figures at Phelps Dodge, but I was expecting to see something. Maybe she wasn't, but she was on a, I don't know. I really don't know. The figure that I saw didn't move, but it was gone by the time we went back around. So if I were to see it, I honestly can't say how I would react. I feel like screaming and running is a good start. Since I actually want to be a professional paranormal investigator, it would be a very bad start for me. But I feel like that was not an overreaction. Anyway, investigators have also caught an EVP saying, "Hey, say what?" shortly after the sounds of cell door slamming and people hitting the wall, like banging on the walls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the other place, the hole, which I guess was even worse than solitary confinement. Noises such as doors opening, sounds of more cell doors slamming are often captured. EVP caught an unexplained voice, and I was listening to it over and over, and it was hard to make out what it was that it was saying at the time. It was definitely male. But then when they went back and they re-reviewed it, it sounded like they were saying, I'm okay. I don't know. I'm not sure. The next place I want to talk about is the Rose Garden. And as amazing and magical as it sounds, it wasn't. However, it is impressive for a couple of reasons. One, it was a test garden in the late 1800s for the Rose Company, Jackson and Perkins. Have you ever heard of them?
Yes.
Have you? I've never heard of them. They're still in business today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I had no idea. Anyway, so it was a test garden in the late 1800s for that Rose Company, and the garden was actually tended to entirely by prisoners. The other thing It was, as you mentioned earlier, the place where the portable gallows were set up during the years of 1920 to 1926, and where 6 of the 10 people executed there were hung.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, families back in the early 20s would climb. They have a high ridge surrounding the prison. Families would climb to the top of that ridge to watch the executions take place.
Oh, my God. And not much has changed.
For fuck's sake. Why? Why?
People are weird.
Well, yeah, God, I guess. I did watch the episode of Ghost Adventures on this location, and Zach and Nick climb up this ridge to see, like, what it was that the families would have seen. They came across, like, a bazillion rattlesnakes. And just as a little sidebar, Zach Bagan says that he's terrified of snakes. But, I mean, like, they would be having to be very careful where they were stepping, because they were fucking everywhere. And at one point, the idiot picks up a snake to face his fear.
Oh my God.
I don't think it was a rattlesnake, but he picks up a snake and then, like, screams and drops it like a little girl. It was the funniest shit I ever watched in my life. It was Zach Bagans. Just because anybody that did that, I would be like, you idiot. They actually did when he picked it up. They put a warning up that do not pick up snakes in the wild. But I thought it was really funny to watch. Because, yeah, this tough macho guy picked up the snake and then screamed and dropped it and ran like a girl. Like a girl and ran. Anyway. Families would climb this ridge surrounding the prison to watch the executions take place. Out here in the Rose Garden, apparitions and cold spots have been seen, as well as numerous reports of tourists and guides getting sudden severe headaches and seeing a red light floating around the garden area. I don't want that either. Don't give me a headache and don't fuck with my emotions. What is it? You're playing with my emotions, Smokey. What is it? Big worm from Friday.
Oh, God.
Play my emotions, Smokey. Okay. Okay. There is also very popular reports, which I think this would be charming. There are popular reports of an elderly man in a prison uniform tending to the roses. Visitors think that it's a current employee dressed in a uniform recreating the era, only to look away and write back to find that he's vanished.
Oh, wow.
Then to later find out the prison never does historic recreations and no one ever dresses up in clothing or uniforms from the era.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Screams and laughter have also been heard in the Rose Garden during overnight investigations when nobody is out there. Screams and laughter, that just sounds like a terrifying combination, but honestly, it's the one thing that it's like the two most popular sounds in my house. Somebody is constantly shrieking. Like if my mom steps on a toy and she thinks she stepped on, like, especially if it's like a wet, squishy, like a toy they've been chewing on, she'll think she stepped in poop if she's not wearing her glasses. So she'll scream.
Oh God.
Like it's a dog toy. And then we'll all start laughing. So, I mean, screams and laughter sound horrifying in a haunted location, but in my house, it's pretty fucking common.
Oh God.
One woman again reported that she felt somebody touching her hair. She poked her head into the cell only to turn around and find that no one was anywhere near her. So the hair touching is a thing there. I'm not down with that, but prep yourself. And then another woman also reported being shoved quite forcefully as she investigated the first floor of cells. Sometimes paranormal investigations are super, super boring. You're just kind of sitting around in the dark and the quiet waiting for something to happen. And something may and it may not. But sometimes they can be quite dangerous.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
We've talked about some of these investigators that have been shoved and scratched and like made to bleed and shit like that. Now, a news reporter for a local station in Boise was in the Rose Garden one night. And I believe he was a part of a paranormal investigation just for a news piece that he was doing. And at 3 a.m., saw a ball of light floating in front of him that the crew also saw. And out of nowhere, he said he felt hands on either side of his head applying a crushing type pressure on his skull.
Wow.
What the fuck? Now, in Cell House 5, which is one of the more, I believe it was one of the more active locations and also one of the more dangerous ones of the prison, I think. There, it's common to hear heavy metal doors with multiple locks, or not to hear it, rather. So it's common to find heavy metal doors with multiple locks. They'll be secured at night by the staff leaving. Typically it's just the one guy kind of shutting up and kind of after the staff has left, just to make sure everything has been taken care of for the night. So he's the only one there. He's reported that these multiple locks will have been secured only to find them unlocked in the morning when staff first arrives. Not loving that. Breaker boxes will have the switches flipped off and on. So they'll shut the lights off in the breaker boxes and in the morning they'll be turned on, or they'll be like, or the opposite. Stuff that's off is on. Stuff that's on, supposed to be on, is off. And they did note in this episode that I watched that, I mean, anybody that has a fuse box or has seen a fuse box or has done anything with a fuse box in a home knows those switches aren't like normal light switches. They're hard. You kind of have to kind of shove up. So it takes a fair amount of energy for an apparition to gather to switch one of those switches, because they're so hard to, they're hard to move, and they're designed that way purposely, so they're not just willy-nilly being turned off and on. So yeah, that's one of the occurrences that happens there. Many visitors, yeah, it's many visitors have been so sensitive to the paranormal activity in this area of the prison, Cell House 5, that they have become quite ill. A lot of people have been emotionally overwhelmed, started crying. Many who tour the facility have to end their tour at this specific spot early because they are so overcome with emotions and the feelings of just physical illness. You know how pissed I'd be if I spent money on a tour and got sick halfway in? No. Fuck you, I'm gonna keep going. So now, more on the Ghost Adventures episode. Zach put Aaron in the communal shower room where an inmate had been gang raped to death. So naturally, he put Aaron in there alone. Sure. Within, yeah, can't wait to meet him. So he puts Aaron in this communal shower room where this inmate had been gang raped to death. And within minutes of being in there, Aaron had a water bottle in his back pocket. And he was like, okay, I'm in here, and he's all getting set up. He felt the water bottle being lifted up out of his pocket. And they had set up cameras and stuff around him. Right before he feels it, the camera catches a shadow moving behind and toward him.
Oh, my God.
Jesus. Yeah, I was like, okay, sure. We didn't see the water bottle, but then they show the footage and you can see this shadow figure kind of walk behind him and toward him. And then a couple of seconds later, he's like, what? And felt this water bottle being lifted up out of his pocket. I'm telling you what, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Not a fan of Zach Bagan's theatrics, but that's a fucking good show. They catch some stuff. Yeah. They really catch stuff. So at one point, Zach tried to get Raymond Snowden to communicate with him, antagonizing him, you know, as he does. And he felt something touching him on the arm and the upper shoulder. The camera that he had that was set several feet away from him does catch this dark mist behind him in that same area as he feels it. He felt physically ill, and then he saw more shadows kind of moving around. So that was that lovely little Cell House 5 section. Other reports that people have reported are footsteps being heard on the upper floors of the cells, the second and third floor, with nobody on them. And then Ghost Hunters actually caught a little shadow holographic image of a human shadow figure. So they had this special camera set up that was hooked up to a television that it would record every 30 seconds, and then they'd kind of play it back to see any kind of, if they caught any kind of manifestations. And they actually did catch the image of a human shadow figure. And then they also caught an EVP saying, not my life. So I don't know with that. Huh. Yeah. So that's really what I have for the hauntings at Old Idaho Penitentiary. I do want to end my part with this. It is another quote that I found from Amber Byerly, who, again, she was the woman I talked about in the beginning of my part. She explains that her work at the facility honors the past, and she says that this leaves her curious about the spirits, but ultimately unafraid. She says, quote, "I'm always telling the stories in a way that I'm just saying to the spirits, hey, I'm giving you a voice that you didn't have when you were here." She said, "I never feel a sense of evil. I feel a sense of sadness that can be tempered by helping them express what they need to."
Hmm.
She does say that her lack of fear doesn't mean she thinks that Old Penn is clear of nefarious spirits. There's that word nefarious again. Got to use a new word in every episode. This episode is brought to you by nefarious. Anyway, she doesn't mean that she thinks that it's clear of nefarious spirits. Quote, "There were some evil dudes here, absolutely." She says, "I'm essentially trying to help them and telling their stories, so they've got my back. I'll be okay."
Hmm.
That sounds like very wishful thinking to me. But, you know, I don't have to work there, so. She can believe what she wants. So that's what I've got. Let's talk a little bit about Know Before You Go, because I recommend this place. I think everybody should check it out. It sounds amazing. I'm all for a fucking abandoned haunted prison. Absolutely. You can visit them, as Archie mentioned, and as I had also touched on in the beginning of my portion. It is run by the, Historic Sites of Idaho?
State Historical Society.
There we go. That's what I said. The historical people that do stuff with Idaho, is that what you said? Their website is history.idaho.gov. Now, it is located at 2445 Old Penitentiary Road in Boise, Idaho, 83712. If you have any questions, you can certainly call them, area code 208-334-2844. Obviously, it is temporarily closed with the pandemic going on. They did say, I believe they actually had a date on their website, and I think it was May 31st. Obviously, as things go, it could be changed. But typically they are open on, 7 days a week. They are closed on most state holidays. Their summer hours, Memorial Day through Labor Day, is 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. with their last admission at 4:15. And then their regular hours, Labor Day to Memorial Day, are noon to 5, again, with the last admission at 4:15 p.m. So you can definitely visit their website for ticket pricing and information and things like that. And Old Idaho State Penitentiary. I was pleasantly surprised. We get a lot of location suggestions, Arch, as you know, that don't end up having too many hauntings. The histories are always so amazing and so rich, but then there's only maybe like a little handful of hauntings that, and I thought maybe this might be the same thing, but boy, did it surprise me in such a wonderful way. It has some, crazy stuff. I do not want a ghost coming up to me, touching my hair, and then whispering, "Pretty." Don't do that. I don't want the living to fucking do that.
Right.
So anyway, yeah. So that's that. That was a really wonderful location, Tiffany. Thank you so much.
This episode. Thank you.
And sorry it took us so long to get around to it. But guys, we get a lot of location suggestions. We've got them all on a list. Just because we haven't done it yet doesn't mean we're not going to get around to doing it. This is proof of that. So, yeah. Otherwise, yeah, thank you guys. We love you. Arch, why don't you tell them where they can find us?
We can be found wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, as well as hoahpodcast.com and HOAH podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon. We have a Patreon that's at HOAH podcast. So that covers everybody. Is that right?
Yeah, that covers everybody. We have whored ourselves out to just about everyone. So find us everywhere.
All right.
Anyway, thanks, guys. We love you, and we will see you next week with a brand new location. And Arch, happy Easter. I love you. I wish we could be together. But soon enough, one day. Mwah. I love you. Bye, guys.
Love you. Bye, everybody.